mind one thing. We will end at 8:30, and from 8:30 to 8:45 will be an opportunity for a question and answer period based on what was presented this evening. It will not be a time for sharing, so please don't share. Just please ask some questions. At this point, I'll be welcoming Russell Craig.
Like all my ex-wife, they didn't know my name either. I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. My name's Paul E. And my home group's the Express Group. And if you're newer, you're coming back. Welcome home. You're off the hook. And that's what was told to me a long time ago. You know, Russell and I never did this. So we're both excited about seeing how we can screw it up. But thank you. So if you have any questions, you might as well get them ready now because we don't know if it's going to make sense.
And let me tell you something. If anybody can screw this thing up, we can. I can tell you.
Well, here we go. We're going to start. You're not ready.
I'm not ready.
We're going to start. We're going to start. I'm going to read the first paragraph of the forward to the first edition or the second edition.
The first edition.
The first edition. I'm sorry. And after the paragraph, Russell has a great story about it. I may have one, and then he'll read a paragraph. So we'll get through this. We'll probably get through one paragraph tonight. but after all, we have nowhere to go. This is the foreword as it appeared in the first printing of the first edition in 1939. We of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, to show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. For them, we hope these pages will prove so convincing that no further authentication will be necessary. We think this account of our experiences will help everyone to better understand the alcoholic. Many do not comprehend that the alcoholic is a very sick person. And besides, we are sure that our way of living has its advantages for all.
My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Carl Gables Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. Haven't found necessary to have a drink since January 25th, 1981. And I'm the junior member of this team. I want to point out that Paul has...
They'll figure that out.
They'll figure that out. I wanted to point out that you have longer time than me, just like you told me to do
right. When
we're in the car. I just don't want to get you upset, you know, because I know how you are. I happened to dig up... I haven't used the one. This is my original big book that I got back in 1981. It's all underlined, everything. It's missing a ton of pages. It's all falling apart. But I got it. The interesting thing is that when I, and I see a lot of you guys have your big book, I remember my sponsor when I first came to AA, he told me to read it from cover to, I said, where do I start? He said, from the beginning, from cover to, and that, you know, the amazing thing to me is I don't remember arguing with him about it. I read it from cover to cover with an underliner and underlining it and all that sort of stuff. But the story I have, and I don't tell this story for any underlying agenda. Don't draw anything. Look, this is my experience, strength, and hope. This is my deal. This is my story. It says our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened. There's like power in the story, in the testimony, because you can argue with everybody about a lot of things, but you can't argue with somebody's experience. And this is just my experience. And you know, the interesting thing is what I found with this deal is I'll tell a story. And it may mean something to one person, maybe mean something completely different to another person, maybe nothing to you except 3 years from now you may think about it. The reason why the story is important to me is this is the first time I noticed, this is a story about the first time I noticed, and I had about 1 month sobriety, that this paragraph was there and how I noticed it. So I guess God wants me to tell the story because why else would I have had this experience with this paragraph except to tell you guys this tonight. And I was sponsored by a guy named Bob Sullivan. I've had several sponsors, and Bob was a great guy, wonderful. All my sponsors are wonderful guys. And he would take me around to meetings, and he took me to this one meeting. And I had read the big book. I mean, I had read it, you know, the way I understand most alcoholics read it. We think we read it, and we miss I don't know whether it's been your experience. Anybody who's been around here a long time knows you can read the big book cover to cover, and you don't really see the stuff until you're 9 years sober, and it's 3 o'clock in the morning, you want to kill yourself. And then all of a sudden you open it up, and something pops out of you that's been there all the time, a million times. It's meant nothing to you, absolutely nothing to you, until you read it that night, and 9 years sober, and you said, man, that's the answer. Why didn't I see that? Because it wasn't relevant, you know, to your life. And so even though I read the big book, it really comes alive as you're going through the trials. So on this particular occasion, my sponsor dropped me off at the South Dade room. I remember it, you know, it's so funny. I have very bad short-term memory. I mean, I'm like 65 years old. I'm like, I'm Gonzo. You'll introduce yourself. I'll forget your name. But it's so funny, and I don't know whether you guys are like this, that certain things can happen to you. You can meet certain people, and 5, 10, 15 years later, you remember something that happened to you in your life that sort of changed your life or the way you looked at things. I mean, I'm telling you, this happened 33 years ago. I was like 1 month or 2 months sober. I remember it like it was yesterday. It's amazing. You know, how does that happen? It's kind of strange. But I was, and this actually has to do with two specific things that we're going to talk. The thing that Paul just read, because he read this, I want to read it one more time. We have Alcoholics Anonymous and more than 100 men and women to show who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body to show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. But I want to go on to read this one part because it also has to do with this. For them, we hope these pages will prove so convincing that no further authentication will be necessary. We think this account of our experience will help everyone to better understand the alcoholic. Many do not comprehend that the alcoholic is a very sick person. This has to do with very sick person. I have a friend named Dan Carell up in New Jersey, and we have a running joke. He's got 50 years, and I'll call him up and I'll say, Dan, you know your problem is you've never understood how really serious this disease is. So he'll say the same things to me. So I was dropped off at the South Aid Room by my sponsor, and there was this guy, old timer, whatever it is, he says, I want you to hear this speaker. He's an excellent speaker. I had read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I understood that there was no cure. Apparently, I'd gotten that thing that there's no cure. There was no cure. I had accepted that thing that there was no cure. There's no cure for alcoholism. All we have is a daily reprieve. And of course, I was a fast study. I'd gone to law school. I was a bright guy. And I had been to a lot of meetings. And I knew that the one thing I knew is that there was no cure for alcoholism. And I knew that I was a recovering alcoholic. Everybody I knew was a recovering alcoholic. I'd say, my name's Russell, I'm a recovering alcoholic. Everybody I knew said they were recovering alcoholics. And so he dropped me off this room and said, this guy's a good speaker. You need to listen to him. And I sat in the back of the room when you hear this guy, and he got up and he said, my name's Joe, and I'm a recovered alcoholic. And I started thinking, I had never heard that before. And, you know, having 2 months sobriety and being an Alcoholics Anonymous, having read the book and gone to meetings, I realized that this guy was a fraud. This guy was a phony. I mean, no, I'm serious. There is no cure for alcoholism. We all know that. And this guy's saying he's recovering. And I know I'm recovering. I know everybody I know is recovering. And this guy's saying he's recovered. And, so the first thing I'm thinking is, like, who the hell invited this guy? You know, this guy, there are newcomers at this meeting. They're given the wrong information. They're going to think they can be cured of this thing. People are going to drink. I'm thinking this is the most ridiculous thing in the world. I'm telling you, I'm actually sitting there saying, feeling like I should rape. You know, you ever hear that at the end of the meeting, say, anybody have a burning desire? I had a burning desire from the beginning of that meeting to the end of that meeting to raise my hand and get up and grab a mic and say, this guy's a phony. Don't believe him. He doesn't. And I got to tell you something. And I don't know if you'll understand this. Alcoholics, there was something sort of like deep inside of my mind, the back of my mind was saying he's sort of saying he's better than me. You know, he's sort of saying, you know, like, you may be recovering, Russ, but I have recovered. And I, all through the meeting, I was debating with myself, how can they have this guy? How can they let people, there are going to be people that are going to die here. Somehow I got to get the message out. I kept on thinking about this man and what he was saying and how can you say he was recovered. And finally the meeting ended. And man, I was trashing this guy in my mind and I was judging him. I just couldn't understand how when it was so clear that there is no cure, how they could let this guy actually talk to people. A size of room, the way this room is right now. When I walked outside and my sponsor was waiting there for me, he said, so Russ, what'd you think? He said, he's a phony. said, the guy's a phony. He says, what do you mean he's a phony? He says, they should never let him speak. He was crazy. He's hurting people out there. He's killing people. I said, what do you mean? He said he was a recovered alcoholic. And my sponsor looked at me and he says, well, you are. I said, no, I'm not. And he says, I'm recovering. He says, no, you're recovered. He says, I said, what are you talking about? He says, and he says, why don't you read the book? He says, I've read the book. There is no cure. He says, read the book. And he opened to this precise paragraph, which I had, quote, read. And I said, we are Alcoholics Anonymous, and more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. To show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. Now, I am recovering. There's no question about it. I am growing, you know, in this deal. I am maturing, you know, and Bill Wilson talks about the next frontier. But what I understand that to mean, which is true, is I don't know about the disease you suffer from, but one of the aspects of the disease I suffer from is I was drinking against my will. I'd wake up in the morning and I'd say, I'm not going to drink today, and by 5 o'clock in the afternoon, I was drinking. I'd wake up the next morning and say, I'm not going to drink today, and by 5 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm searching for dimes, nickels, and quarters to get up $2.89 so I can get a quart bottle of Carlos Rossi Cante and start drinking. I'd wake up in the morning and say, I'm not going to go to the bar, and I'd end up going to the bar anyway. In other words, I'd do it over and over. I could not stop drinking. Now, normal people wouldn't understand that, okay? But alcoholics understand what it's like to not be able to stop drinking. Let me tell you something. That's when you got that going on, that form of alcoholism going on, you are involved with a hopeless state of mind and body. I mean, that is really different than my boyfriend left me. That's a different type of thing than they're firing me from the job. That's a different type of thing like, I don't know what I'm going to do if I'm broke. That's a different kind of thing than the emotional stuff, the fear stuff, the other stuff we suffer from. But that deal, that hopeless state of mind and body where I could not stop drinking, I've recovered from that. You know, everybody in here has recovered. Now, you may end up going back to it. I hope you don't. There are people that go back to it. But let me tell you something. If you came in here like I came in here because you couldn't stop drinking, everybody comes in. You've recovered from that hopeless state of mind and body. So I said that, and I understood what he was saying. So then, of course, my sponsor says to me this. He says, okay, now we got past that, so what else did he say? So what else did he say? And I looked at him and I said, I don't know. Because I was assassinating that guy in my mind for an hour. Which brings me to, many do not comprehend that the alcoholic is a very sick person. This is a serious disease. When a guy can use one word at a meeting that you disagree with, and you spend the next hour so fighting him and ripping him apart in your mind that you don't hear, I mean, imagine, this guy actually knew what he was talking about. Imagine if I had actually heard what he had to say. You know, he might probably have something interesting to say. So that's just a little story about this particular paragraph. I'm turning it over to you.
You don't want
to. I hope you have a good story.
My stories are so much better than yours.
I know.
Anyway, the one thing that Russell did say, we're not going to get into a controversy, recovery. I knew that he was going to do that.
Yeah.
So we're just going to pass that. The one main thing that I heard, and I hope everybody here heard, was his sponsor and the importance of sponsorship. And to me, as I sit here and as people I know here for most of my sobriety or all of my sobriety, and to me the second most important thing to getting Alcoholics Anonymous is getting that sponsor, getting that guide, getting that person that's been through the road, that's going to help you, go through this deal. Because, you know, just because we get sober, we don't walk up the 12 golden steps of life and never experience a negative emotion. As a matter of fact, what sobriety is the ability to have everything crash and burn and not pick up a chemical. And by God's grace, that's what's possible here. I've seen tragedies in his life. He's seen them in my life. I've seen them in many people in this room's life. But no matter what, we don't pick up, and it's going to pass. I mean, everything passes. This book, what was happening tonight, I was home reading it. And by the way, just a couple of things. He says that I'm a senior member. His sobriety date is January 25th, 1981, and my sobriety date is February 12th, 1980. So what happens is there's 18 days where Russell is allowed to say he has the same time as Paul D.
It's like an eclipse. It's like a solar eclipse.
And what he has found out is most of the real information was given out in the time he was missing. So, you know, basically between the two of us, we have 67 years and almost 600 pounds.
Okay. 67 years of undetected drinking.
That's all I was going to say. Anyway, so, you know, the enormity of that statement to me, every time I read it, forget about recovered or recovering, is the fact that there were 100 people. To me, that is so beyond my ability to understand. This year, for the first time in my entire sobriety, I was telling Russell, I went to Founders Day in Akron, Ohio, which is on June 10th, AA's anniversary. One of the highlights of my 33 years of sobriety. It was so incredible, so powerful, sitting in Dr. Bob's house, sitting at his kitchen table where he 12-stepped hundreds of... It was amazing. I came back there with goosebumps, and if anybody hasn't been there, I so highly recommend it. I won't miss that again. And so when you think about, and the forward of each edition, which we'll get to maybe by next June, because if we get through two paragraphs in 2 weeks, we'll be happy. But the forward to each edition speaks to the growth of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the growth of Alcoholics Anonymous has only happened because of the enormity of the power that put those two people, Dr. Bob and Bill Wilson, from two opposite sides of the country, two people that couldn't be more dissimilar in their lifestyle, in the way they acted, in what they were about. And yet God, in June of 1935, hooked them up, and this is what we have. Well, we're in every country in the world. Millions upon millions of people's lives have been changed, altered, and affected positively because of these two guys. And to me, that's an amazing thing. And the more I think about it, the more amazing it is. So if you don't get the enormity of that, when you go home tonight, just think about the fact that, and the other thing, the last thing I'll say, and then we'll let Russell read the next paragraph, is the Bill Wilson's sobriety day was November of 1934. Alcoholics Anonymous' birth date was June 10th of 1935. Why is that? Because until there were two, there was not Alcoholics Anonymous. Bill couldn't stay sober until he found someone to share with, and the therapeutic value of one of us helping another one of us, and that's the foundation of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's the whole deal. From 78 years ago to this very minute, that's what it's about. You share with me, we find out we're the same, and then we walk together. So that's that piece.
And the other thing I wanted to point out that what Paul was saying is these two individuals, and I'm not going to get deeply into this, Bill and Bob had different personalities. They had sort of completely, they were completely different types of people. I'm not going to get into that. Maybe one day you'll read Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers and things like that. They were different people from different cultures. They have different focuses. And it's almost like together they made one person. And there's no question that if you knew anything about Bill, Dr. Bob steadied him and helped him, and Bill helped Dr. Bob, and they worked together. So it was an excellent team deal. So let me read the rest. Is that it?
The next paragraph.
It is important that we remain anonymous because we are too few at present to handle the overwhelming number of personal appeals which may result from this publication. Being mostly business or professional folk, we cannot well carry on our occupations in such an event. We would like it understood that our alcoholic work is an avocation. When writing or speaking publicly about alcoholism, we urge each of our fellowship to admit his personal name, designate himself as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Very earnestly, we ask the press also to observe this request for otherwise we shall be greatly handicapped. We are not an organization in the conventional sense of the word. There are no fees or dues whatsoever. The only requirement, you guys are going to like this one, the only requirement for membership is an honest desire to stop drinking. That was one thing that was changed. Right? They took out the word honest. I want you to think about that for a second. We are not allied with any particular faith, sect, denomination, nor do we oppose anyone. We simply wish to be helpful to those who are afflicted. I'll stop right there. Maybe we can talk about that kind of stuff. I've always found it interesting, and I've got to be honest with you. I haven't gone back to the archives to research this as to why they decided to take out the word honest. You know, I suppose there's some sort of stumbling block, you know what I mean? People in the back room saying, I don't know, am I honest, am I not honest, whatever. You know, that kind of thing. And it's always sort of amazing to me. If you read the book, further on when you read the book, Alcoholics Anonymous, or Dr. Bob, the Good Old Timers, you find out how incredibly important the surrender was. In other words, how important it was for people to admit and to surrender. And I'm not going to go into that whole story, that kind of deal. And I just found it an interesting deal. I have a whole theory on that as to why they took out the word honest. But it's probably a good thing. You know, anything that gets somebody up there to sort of admit that they're an alcoholic, we wouldn't want that to be a stumbling block. But it is kind of interesting when we have a program that says, you know, which basically says one of the most important things is honesty, is to be honest with yourself and a capacity to be honest. That they would take out the word honest in our definition. But maybe Paul knows the reason why they did that.
23 years, that was in that 11 months you missed. so I hope you get this. I hope you listen carefully. The reason that the honesty was taken out of that first early, the first edition, was because when we're in the streets and we're in a detox and we're just got through with our bottle of Thunderbird or Ripple or whatever we're drinking or using, and then someone says to you, do you honestly want to stop? How could you possibly have a clue about what honesty is? We are the most dishonest. It says it later on in one of these things that we're maladjusted to life. We're dysfunctional individuals. So, yes, honesty is right up there with the most important things in this program. And it comes in the fifth chapter, and it comes in the fourth step, and it comes where it says in the first paragraph of the fifth chapter, the word honesty is mentioned three times. However, you're here a while. That's page 58. We're in the forward. So they're embracing anyone that has that gift of desperation. The hopelessness, the incomprehensible thought of having to go on another minute in the abyss that we all come from. And I'm just so grateful once again for the incredible sponsorship I had, Ray Allen, Fred T, you know, which a lot of people here know. Fred told me about, be grateful you have the gift of desperation. He said it to me over and over, and this is a story that probably not pertinent now, but I'll tell it anyway, that he was gone many, many years, and through a series of coincidences in New York, I found out that the gift of desperation was G-O-D. While he was alive and telling it to me, I didn't know it. It was a cute saying. And so then when the guy in New York told me, my initial thing is, because of my psycho ego, is to say, oh yeah, I knew that, of course, what are you kidding, you know? And then I told him I really didn't, but I left the meeting and I called all of my friends down here and the people I sponsored and I said, did you know that gift of desperation was G-O-D? Not one person. It was only 6 or 7 years ago. Not one person knew that. So then I thought further, I wonder if Fred knew it. And I won't get a chance to ask him until this party's over. Anyway, so that's the key. I mean, you know, you need a sponsor, your honesty will come, and we get honest in degrees.
Okay. I'll finish up. We shall be interested to hear from those who are getting results from this book, particularly from those who have commenced work with other alcoholics. We should like to be helpful in such cases. Inquiry by scientific, medical, and religious societies will be welcomed. And the only other thing I'd say about this before we go on to the second edition is it's amazing to me. You know, has anybody here ever been to a business meeting? Or just hanging around Alcoholics Anonymous for an official period of time? It is amazing to me. Let me tell you something. I used to go to business meetings where we were discussing smoking or not smoking. I mean, the most inane sort of things, you know, whether you should open up with the Lord's Prayer or the Serenity or whatever it is. I mean, it's unbelievable. The fights that break out. I mean, it is to say that God isn't behind this or some sort of miracle isn't. To have, and you've read Bill's story. You read his story. So we all know what Bill's all about. You understand what I'm saying? As much as I love him, he was an alcoholic. They were all alcoholics. It's amazing to me that you had 100 people scattered around the United States that were sober for 4 years or less. They put together a corporation. They wrote this book, and they put it out. And because of that, we're all sober now. Now, you guys really think it was because of Bill Wilson? You understand? You know who was? You know, Reed, he was 18 months sober. He'd be plagued by waves of depression and self-pity. I mean, how this thing ever came together and stuck together, you know, without these guys committing suicide or going nuts. And you can imagine, they were broke. They had money problems. They had every problem you have at 1 year, at 18 months, at 2 years, at 3 years. They had that going on. And guess what? There was no big book workshop meeting. There were no step series meetings. You understand what I'm saying? There was no Carl Gables group of Alcoholics Anonymous. There was no even big book. You know what I mean? There's some other books they were looking at. There was no big book. There was no spot. There was no nothing. You know, there were some clergymen that hung around with and stuff like that. And the bottom line is to put together, not only stick together and stay sober, but put together this volume, publish it throughout the United States. I mean, come on, that's amazing. You know, I dare say, I'm not sure there was a group of 100 people handpicked with 4 years or less today. If I went through a group and just picked people, you have 1 month, you have 6 months, you have 2 years, you got 4 years coming together and had them do a similar thing, whether that would actually hang together and they could do that. It's unbelievable. It's a miracle that this thing actually happened when you think about it. Do you want to read the second?
I will, Russell.
Okay.
Thank you very much. This is the forward to the second edition of the Big Book. And when you hear these figures, this is the part that just overwhelms me. Keep in mind, this first book was written in 1939. There were 100 people, less than the number of people in this room. There were 100 people. Now listen to this. Figures given in this forward describe the fellowship as it was in 1955. A scant 16 years later. Since the original foreword to this book was written in 1939, this is the part that brings this little paragraph, a wholesale miracle has taken place. A wholesale miracle that we have all been touched with has taken place. Our earliest printing, the book in 1939, voiced the hope, in quotes, God bless you, that every alcoholic who journeys will find the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous at his destination. Already, continues the early text, twos and threes and fives of us have sprung up in other communities. 16 years have elapsed between our first printing and the presentation in 1955. In that brief space, Alcoholics Anonymous has mushroomed into nearly 6,000 groups whose membership is far above 150,000 recovered alcoholics. Groups are to be found in each of the United States and all of the provinces of Canada. AA has flourishing communities in the British Isles, Scandinavian countries, South Africa, South America, Mexico, Alaska, Australia, and Hawaii. All told, promising beginnings have been made in some 50 foreign countries and U.S. possessions. Some are just now taking shape in Asia. Many of our friends encourage us by saying that this is but a beginning, only the augury of a much larger future ahead. So, you know, just to expand a little bit on what Russell said, there's no question that this was a God-inspired thing. You know, to take it a step further, you have Dr. Bob. I look at him as the humble guy of Alcoholics Anonymous. He never got the press. You know, he was like the proctologist in Ohio, which all of us could have used anyway. And he was just like really, you know, like not out in front. Bill Wilson, the New York stockbroker, egomaniac, womanizer. As a matter of fact, I look at it this way, that if Bill Wilson were alive today, he would have been the one to create the mortgage crisis. He would have been doing those subprime mortgages, charging usurious interest rates, and then taking your houses. I mean, that's what Bill Wilson was about. And by the way, Bill Wilson was my sponsor. Because this book here, I'm just going to read this now and then I'll listen to Russell. This was given to me when Ray died. And Ray was the chairman of Bill Wilson's gratitude dinner in New York. Ray got sober in 1956. And in 1961, when he had 5 years and he was chairing Bill's gratitude dinner, Bill wrote to him, "Dear Ray, for your signal service to our well-lived fellowship, I send you all my gratitude, ever Bill." That wasn't Bill Schwartz. That's Bill Wilson. And to me, that's the information. Okay, we got it from the people. And that's why, to me, mentors and people that came before are so important. I mean, there's a guy here at this meeting that was at my first meeting. And he's been a mentor of mine from straight through, from that day. Kenny Kane. He's got 40 years. He goes to more meetings than people are suggested to go to when you're in treatment. Now, and I'm going to tell you why that is. Because when I got to my first meeting, maybe my first week, someone came up to me, one of them, either him or Jim or Fred, somebody came up to me and they said, "You know what, Paul? You're going to be coming here for a long time." And I looked at him, I said, "Well, I mean, okay, but why would you say that?" "Because only the sick ones keep coming to meetings." So if you've been sober a while and you're still here at AA, you be the judge.
Well, you know, I mean, I got it. One of the things that I have to, and I haven't thought about this in a while, quite frankly, you know, any of you who've been to any of my step series, you know, I'm pretty focused on the third step. And I'm not going to get out of this thing without talking about God. But one of the things that I find, since they use the word miracle, that when I look back on my life, and I didn't come to AA, you know, worshiping God or looking for God or anything like that. I mean, I was a guy who was, you know, the God of my understanding. Listen, all I wanted was an American Express card, a Playboy Club card, you know, a Playboy bunny, and, you know, the car, the money, sex, drugs, and rock and roll, and that's all I was interested in. But I have to tell you, the truth is, for me, and this is just for me, and hopefully it's for you, I from the very beginning, somehow, some way, in some manner, and not because of my intellect, because the truth is, my brains actually hurt me in this deal. For some reason, my thinking, I'm a rationalizer, you know, I tell myself, rationalize. My brains will take me out of here. Somehow, some way, from the first day when I picked up a white chip, when I was sick, went for months and months and months, I thought my life was over. It was never going to get better again. And I was 31 years old, and I thought it was over for me. And I'm sitting in an A room, and I get this feeling about me. I mean, alkies are in the feelings. A feeling that I had never had before, you know, a feeling that I was going to be okay. I'd never had a feeling that I was going to be okay. A feeling just sitting in an A room that I was going to be okay and getting up and picking up a white chip. And I recognize that now that, at even early on in AA, for the first few months, the first few years, I felt that something was happening to me that was supernatural. Does that make any sense to you? That was supernatural. That was like the words that they're using, like a miracle. Later on in the doctor's opinion, what do they say? They say ideas that are going through these people's minds are suddenly shifted. It's like a phenomena. We can't understand it. Are shifted and they become dominated by a whole new set of ideas. There was some sort of sense watching what was happening to other people. And it happens to me every day and throughout my 33 years, watching what's happening to A, that there's a sense that there's more going on here than just what's going on in the hospital programs and in the therapy and group therapy and all the stuff, even all the steps we're doing. There's something supernatural going on here where people, one day, they're total wrecks, and the next day, they're completely different individuals, you know? They may even slip back sometimes, but they've gone from you know, nothing to something. It's just unbelievable. There's some sort of force going on. And so when I see something, I had a sense, I hope you have this sense, even if you're brand new, that you're part of some sort of movement, some sort of fellowship, some sort of something that's so much bigger than you, you know, bigger than me, bigger than what's ever going on in the world that's sort of supernatural, which there's a strength involved and a power involved here that you can tap into that's sort of like, that's indescribable. And I had that sense. I can't, you know, I can't explain it any better than I can explain it now. I can't quantify it. You know, I can't mathematically put it into a formula. I just know I had that sense. You know, I tend to think that, well, doesn't everybody have that sense? You know, the answer is, I think, and I may not be right about this, I think that in some cases the answer is maybe no. There may be people come here that maybe they're not ready, maybe they don't want what we have and things like that, and they don't have that sense. It's sort of like they do things mechanically. But the bottom line is they still have that worldly sort of sense. It's just about getting through this thing and getting out there so they can get what they don't want what they have, they want what they had, and that kind of thing. And that's what I think the sense of these writings are. As I read through the big book, and especially this one, the sense that something miraculous is happening. There's some sort of power going on here, some sort of force, which is beyond description, that's driving this thing. So that's it.
I think it was phenomenal. Why don't you do some more reading?
Okay. The spark that was the flare into the first AA group was struck at Akron, Ohio in June of 1935 during a talk between a New York stockbroker and an Akron physician. 6 months earlier, the broker had been relieved of his drink obsession by a sudden spiritual experience. Following a meeting with an alcoholic friend who had been in contact with the Oxford groups of that day, he had also been greatly helped by the late Dr. William D. Silkworth, a New York specialist in alcoholism, who is now accounted no less than a medical saint by AA members, and whose story of the early days of our society appears in the next pages, i.e. the doctor's opinion. From this doctor, the broker had learned the grave nature of alcoholism, though he could not accept all the tenets of the Oxford group. He was convinced of the need for a moral inventory, confession of personal defects, restitution to those harmed, helpfulness to others, and the necessity of belief in and dependence upon God. I might as well stop right there. There's enough there for the next 3 hours.
Until next week, yeah. You know, one thing he said in his earlier pontification was about the intellect. And how Russell's intellect was like, you know, too good or would have excluded him from this. And I don't know if anybody has been to meetings where they tell us or it's said somewhere that the alcoholic is more intelligent than other. Has everybody ever heard that? Okay, good. Well, I want you to know something. The only place you're ever going to hear that is in an AA.
Don't look for it in the papers.
I once told that to my wife, who's a Barnard graduate. She looked at me and said, what are you kidding me? Because I was never in the state mental hospital. She said, how is that so intelligent? So we will hang on to any straw that's humanly possible.
So I got to say one thing. We were having dinner. I don't know whether you heard this. I think you may have. And somebody was talking about somebody that's having a problem, who's a professional, drinking. And he says, but he's so intelligent. And I said, if I've heard this once, I've heard it 1,000 times, about a guy who's committing suicide by drinking and self-destructive. You know, Carl Menninger wrote a book in 1935 or so called Man Against Himself, and his chapter of alcoholism says alcoholics are men and women who are out to destroy themselves. And if you watch them, they are. It doesn't matter how talented they are or who they are, their movie star, they're out to destroy themselves. If I've heard it once, I've heard it 1,000 times about some alcoholic who's drinking himself to death, doing insane things, and they say, and he's so intelligent, you know? So I've come to the conclusion that smarts does not cure the situation, that it actually may make it worse. As a matter of fact, if you've ever tried to 12-step somebody who's smart, you understand what I'm talking about. They always have an answer to justify why they burned down the house with their wife in it and the house. You know, that makes sense to them.
Which my sponsor did, by the way. We'll get to that at another time. But, you know, once again, it goes back to sponsorship. As he's talking, I flash on the people that blazed the way for me, that saved my life. I can't put it any other way, because my God has skin on them. And those were the people. God never came into my bedroom and said, Paulie, you're off the hook. But Fred and Ray and Jim and Kenny and the people here before me, they hugged and loved me and told me it was going to be okay. And Fred would always say to me, the desperate becomes sweetly reasonable. Well, you know what? My desperation got me sweetly reasonable. I wasn't fighting anymore. I surrendered. All my scorecards read zero. I was done. You know, I hit a bottom in 1969. I wanted to stop drinking and stop using. I didn't find you people till 1980. Those 11 years were the horrific nightmare of mine that I lived, crawling the streets of New York, getting lower and lower, and when I thought it couldn't get any lower, getting lower yet. And then I get here, and it was like the miracle we're talking about. Anybody that's sitting here today, I mean, all I'm going to say to you is if you're an alcoholic or drug addict, and you're sitting in this room tonight, and you haven't picked up a chemical in 24 hours, and you're like me, that's a miracle. Okay, because I'm going to tell you something. The only time I ever refused a drink or a drug is if I misunderstood the question. I mean, I wasn't, you know, someone that ever said, oh, no, that's okay, I've got a buzz, I don't want anymore. I had enough when I was unconscious on the floor. And so all I'm going to tell you is if you're here and you're new or you've been bouncing around or you're not sure if you want this, you know, they used to say, go to 90 meetings in 90 days. I don't hear that much anymore, probably because insurance runs out. But if you, you know, and then they would say, and if you don't like where you're at after the 90 days, we'll refund your misery. Because we know where you're at in your first 90 days. And I promise you, if you do that, long before the 90 days, my misery had left. I got a glimmer of hope, as Russell was saying. I felt there might have been what I was looking for my whole life. And I really could have a life ahead of me. And I'll tell you what, I've been sober over half my life. Not even humanly possible. I was in the state hospital in New York. I went on Medicare last year. What, are you serious? On Medicare? I mean, that's not, I mean, what are you, come on, Medicare. I had a tough time even walking into that office. But you know what, man, a lot of people aren't going to get to the age to get to Medicare. So I'm just so blessed for every day I've been given.
I want to expound for a second on the concept of the miracle, of the phenomena, of something supernatural. Even to the extent that not necessarily understanding or believing or having faith in God, but just some sort of understanding that a miracle is happening in your life. You know, you all know Bill Dodson was Alcoholics Anonymous number 3. He was the man on the bed. He's the guy on the bed, you know, they were reading the Bible to and everything like that. He was the third guy that got sober. You know, AA started in 1935. The big book wasn't published until 1939. Most of these people that wrote the stories and everything got sober between 35 and 39. You want to learn about that, read Dr. Bob and the Good Alzheimer's. But this is the point I want to make on miracle, which has to do with you. This has to do with you. You need to listen to this deal. And I'm going to sort of make a statement. I told Paul, I promised I wouldn't make a an unequivocal statement, but I'm going to make one. I just want to read something to you from Alcoholics Anonymous number 3, and this is a quote from Bill Wilson. This is what this guy is, and this is what I have found in my life. You know, one of the things that that Paul and I were talking about, it's sort of like a conundrum. It's sort of amazing is how many people don't make it. I mean, they'll make it for a while, maybe for a year or two or three or five or 10. And quite frankly, although it's sad, I think if you stay sober 10 years and it's a good purpose, and even if you slip, that's better than not, you know, drinking all through that 10 years. It's not a totally waste or anything like that. But a lot of people will point to what they believe is the low success rate. In other words, maybe 1% or 2% of people actually stay sober for more than 20 years and things like that is some sort of dissing of Alcoholics Anonymous, okay? When it is really miraculous what is happening with alcoholics, you know, even though some slip and some don't make it. But here's the quote I wanted to talk about. Alcoholics Anonymous number 3, Bill Dodson. And he was the third guy who got sober. This is what he says on page 191. It says, it would be hard to estimate how much AA has done for me. I really wanted the program and I wanted to go along with it. I noticed that others seemed to have such a relief, a happiness, of something that I thought a person ought to have. Yeah, you ought to have. I was trying to find the answer. I knew there was even more, something I hadn't got. And I remember one day, a week or two after I'd come out of hospital, Bill was over at my house talking to my wife. In other words, this guy's got about 2 or 3 weeks sober. He ended up staying sober the rest of his life, Bill Dodson, but he had 2 or 3 weeks sober. But, you know, Bill was sober, maybe, you know, for a few more months or whatever it is, a year or so more than him, and he noticed that even though he was sober and Bill was sober, Bill had some sort of release. There was something happened that he wanted. Maybe y'all will have gone to meetings and you've actually seen people, you know, say, if you want what we have, that you said, and I've seen this happen so many times, man, I wish I could be like her. I wish I could be like him. I wish I could have that deal, whatever that is. You know, I'm sober, but I'm missing something. And he says, I knew there was even more, something I hadn't gotten. I remember one day, a week or two after I'd come out of hospital, Bill was over at my house talking to my wife, and we were eating lunch, and I was listening and trying to find out why they had this relief that they seemed to have. Bill looked across at my wife and said to her, now he wrote this, by the way, when he was 15 years sobriety, I believe. This is one of those things, like I remembered something when I, 33 years ago, this is one of these things that he remembers. It was such a key in his life 15 years back that he felt he had to share it and put it down. He said, Bill said, Henrietta, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease that I just want to keep talking about it and telling other people. I think I have the answer. Bill was very, very grateful. Very, very grateful that he had been released from this terrible thing and he had given God the credit for having done it. And he's so grateful about it, he wants to tell other people about it. That sentence, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease, that I just want to keep telling people about it, has been a sort of golden text of the AA program for me. And this is what I want to say to you about that in terms of the miracle. My feeling is, and I believe it's true, you know, if you have a sense that a miracle's happening to you, it's a miracle that you're sober. It's a miracle that you're sitting here. I mean, even when bad things happen to you, when all of a sudden you lose the job or the romance goes or something happens that's horrible, but somehow you haven't drank that day, you know what I mean? And you have some sort of sense that it's a miracle that you're not drinking, that you're getting through this and you're not drinking. And you're able to carry that sense that there's a miracle going on in your life no matter what's going on with the circumstances and be grateful for the fact that that miracle's happening, you'll never drink again. I'm telling you, you'll never drink. You will never drink again. That's what this guy was really saying. You know, it may have taken a long time to formulate God or where that miracle came from, but there was a sense, I think, in people's minds and hearts that there is something happening to them that they owe a debt of gratitude for because it's so extraordinary and they know it's not coming from them. You know, it's something special, something different. And if you got that deal going on for you, that's why the miracle aspects of this program are so important. The supernatural aspects are so important. I don't think you'll ever drink again as long as you can keep that up. And I'll tell you something. The day you forget that you're here because it's a miracle, or if you never get the understanding that it's a miracle, you just think it's some sort of scientific thing, or you happen to go to a doctor, or you know, you went, or that kind of deal, it may last, I have a feeling it may last for a while. It may last for a year or two, but I'll tell you, this is a powerful, powerful world out there. There's a lot of stuff going on, and we're all going to have our high points and low points, and it's going to be a tough year. It's going to be a shaky, a shaky sort of sobriety. And I may be wrong about that, but this is just what I've sort of seen after 33 years, just like this guy saw. The people that sort of like are grateful and feel some sort of miracle has happened, that maybe they don't even deserve it, but it's happened to them, tend to stay sober and tend to stick, you know what I mean? And develop a God of their understanding, things like that. And the people that don't have that sense, you know, and sort of think it's just sort of like a therapeutic set, and they did it themselves, you know what I mean? You know, I'm staying sober, you know, that kind of thing, they don't do so well. So.
No, that's very true. And that's the key. That's the secret. I mean, there is no secret, but that's the secret. Early on, my sponsors and most of the people I respect to this day in Alcoholics Anonymous say that a grateful alcoholic won't drink. That's basically what he was saying. I was told to physically write a gratitude list from early on. Well, this may be an indication of just how sick I am, but I now have 27 journals in my handwriting chronicling my sobriety. Not that I was ordered to do it. It was suggested I did it. As I started doing it, I started feeling better. And now it's to the point I have it. It's all in my den. I can pull any book down January 1986. And even if it was a bad thing, in quotes, going on at that time, A, I got through it sober. And B, invariably, it turned out to be the best thing, just like it says throughout our book. Okay, what I think is terrible, well, who am I? What do I know? I ended up in a rocking chair in a state hospital. So obviously, that's my best thinking got me there. So when I think something's terrible, I better let go of that thought and say, all right, what do you guys thought? And you know, the last thing I want to say, or maybe, I mean, I don't know. No, only because I'm looking at Kenny and he is so important in my sobriety. Way back at the 101 Club at the 6:30 on Sunday night meeting, there was this little guy from New York, Lou Lieberbaum. And he chaired the Sunday night 6:30 beginners meeting every Sunday. And for years, I mean, you know, he was from New York, a little guy like the Penguin, you know, maybe 5'5" or 5'6". And he was sober a long time. And he just had this amazing gratitude, you know. And he would just walk up and down the 101 Club, you know. It was like in the big room, but he would just walk up and down. He says, I am so grateful to be a member. I mean, I remember this. It's 20-some years ago. I am so grateful to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the most incredible. As a matter of fact, as I walk this, I want to kiss the floor of Alcoholics Anonymous when I walk into this room. So Kenny gave him the name. Dirty Lips Louie. From kissing the floor of Alcoholics. So those are the stories that enriched my life. And I thank God today I can embrace those stories and realize that, you know what, even the worst thing that you think's happening, you know, death, divorce, bankruptcy, IRS liens, indictments, and all of that happened to be sober. You know, I mean, so what? If you drink or use, whatever's going on, it's going to pale by comparison to what's going to be going on. In addition to everything else that's still there. So you might as well make that phone call first before you pick up. And that was the other thing was suggested. You know, my first meeting, someone had a t-shirt that said, I can't, we can. To this very day, I can't do this. I was at a meeting last night in New York City with a bunch of my buds on 2nd Avenue and 55th Street. The night before, I was at a meeting in New York City on Bleecker Street in the Lower East Side. I love this deal. Why? Where else am I going to go? You know, my friend Don says this one thing, and just think about this when you leave. Someone should sell tickets. All you have to do is get involved in Alcoholics Anonymous, listen and experience some of the stories. You can't buy a Broadway show or any movie or a horror film or a comedy with some of the stories in this joint. So anyway, that's my deal.
And you know, the one thing about gratitude is it's really kind of impossible to be grateful to yourself. You ever hear of anybody saying, I'm grateful to myself? If you're grateful, you're always grateful to something outside yourself. We used to have a guy named Nate Levine. He said, I have an attitude of gratitude, which gives me an aptitude for living. And, you know, just by saying that you're grateful, you automatically are taking the first steps to believing there's something outside of yourself that you're grateful to, that you owe something to. And that'll keep you sober. That's the first step. That'll get you going and keep you sober for a long time.
It is 8:30, and we have been instructed, if we want to be invited back, do we just ask for questions now?
Well, first thing we got to do is make sure we get your name right, and then once we do that, the chairperson will certainly turn the meeting over to the group.
Okay.
My name's not Fred.
So
it's
no
Paul.
Questions for Fred tonight. All right, we only have questions for Russell and Paul, right?
That's good.
Okay, at this point, the speakers will take any questions. This is not a time for sharing. Instead, it's a chance to ask any questions of anything they may have said. So,
the floor is
open.
It's
up to you for the next 15 minutes.
Take 30,
like you said.
Yes. Yes.
I'm a member of the Wednesday night study group. My name is Pete.
Hey, Pete.
I wanted to ask you guys, I'm on my ninth step now, making amends, and I made a pretty strong amend, and God put a gift in my life. I want to know if you remember the
feeling. I'm sorry?
I want to know if you can remember the feeling or the gift that God gave you when you were able to make your very first amend.
Well, I can, actually. It wasn't a gift, because he wanted the truth. By this point, I'm supposed to be dealing with honesty, because I was such a rocket science and rapid learner in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was going to so many meetings that I figured there were some things I didn't need any counseling on, or I didn't need to share a sponsor with. And one of those was amends. So what I figured, I mean, there were some major amends. My wife, my sister, my parents, God rest their souls. But I owed my sister some dramatic amends. There was no maybes about it. And so I decided, I wrote this incredible letter. And I'm a pretty good writer. And I put it in the mail. I only forgot two things. Number one, I had not done an eighth step. And number two, I had not shared this great idea with my sponsor. Because I thought this letter was so spectacular that Inner Group was going to use it as a form letter for proper amends to a family member. Well, I'm just going to give you one quick story there. My sister, who's also a very good writer, 2 weeks later, I got the response. All I could say is I was on my knees at my sponsor's house. What happened? She wrote a two-page letter that began with, "What do you mean forgive you? You ruined my life." And then it got worse from there. So thank God I was grounded in the foundation and surrender of Alcoholics Anonymous, that I was then able to do it in the proper order. And they've all been very joyous.
So, here's the true story. I know some of you guys. You like me?
Yeah.
Okay, then listen to this. See how you do after this one. I was married to a wonderful gal. I had a little baby, little child who was 5 years old, little boy. And I left my wife and walked away from her and walked away from that marriage because I wanted to go out with other women. She was a great gal. She was a loyal gal. She did nothing wrong, but I wanted to booze and go out with other women, and that's why I left. I could have told you a million things, but that's the bottom line. I was bored. And that's good enough for me. Because, you know, when you're selfish, self-centered, not fault, and all you care about is your feelings, believe me, you can walk out on people, you can do all sorts of things. Doesn't matter how intelligent you are. We went to a marriage counselor because she was trying to fix the marriage and do the right thing. And he asked her, he said, what are the 10 things you want, or 3 things you want to change with Russell? And she said, bam, bam, bam. She followed the cue, was to try to fix the marriage. And he said to me, he says, Russ, what's the 3 things you want to change about your wife? He says, I just want to go out with other women. How do you feel about me now? Yeah, I was an asshole. And you know something? And that's how I felt about myself. I was a piece of crap. One of the reasons Alcoholics drink is because they know they're pieces of crap. It doesn't matter what they say to the people. So what the amends I want to tell you about is the day I went in to see my ex-wife, when I walked in to see her. to tell her while she was in hospital bed because she had cancer. Okay, she's okay. She's alive. She married a non-alcoholic guy. God bless her. You know, he's a great guy, and we're friends now. Because I made this amends, because I went in there and I said, I just want to. Can I talk to you? And she said yes. And I started explaining to her about how I was wrong. And I always use it when I did my amends. I didn't start off with I'm sorry, because let me tell you something. I had a PhD and I'm sorry. You know, but I'm sorry doesn't necessarily mean I'm wrong. Because I would say, I'm sorry, and if you didn't immediately forgive me, I'd say, I was sorry, you know what I mean? It was just my way of getting you off my back. And I said, I just want to tell you I was wrong. I was wrong for doing this. I was wrong the way I treated you. I was wrong, and I explained the whole thing. And this is what she said to me. She said, I thought I was the failure. That's what she said to me. She said, I thought I was the failure. All those years, they were like, you know, there was really, I had been divorced from her for about 3 or 4 years, or 5 years, and then I was making the amends. And all those years, I thought how I had screwed her over and how bad I was, which I was, and she had done nothing wrong. And when I made the amends to her, she said to me, she says, I thought I screwed up. Can you imagine that? Would you ever think that people are thinking that? She thought all those years, and I said, you didn't do anything wrong. I said, as a matter of fact, if you had somehow kept me there or something like that, we'd never be able to talk today. I was out of control. And I don't remember, I think the feeling I had was I wanted to cry when I got out of there. It was sort of like relief, but sort of like, it was relief. It was an intense feeling of gratitude. I mean, the feelings were so intense between gratitude and wanting to cry and all sorts of things, and relief because I had gotten that out of the way. You know, that thing between me and my former wife, okay? So that may not have been the first amends, but that's the amends I remember the most, okay?
I'm bad, and I am a grateful recovery. This is the Russell, but Paul, I'd like your input as well. I kind of feel like still thoughts, and I'm so grateful that God has relieved me from this. And I'm having a hard time reconciling with new sponsees that I get, to the newcomer in the room, my faith, and, you know, of course, Russell, we share the same faith, and how I, you know, I hear, don't mention God, newcomer, they'll run to the room, you know, room, and, you know, catch your hair on fire. I can't really, if I can tell that, I can't really worry about that, but how do I share how God has been so good to me in my faith without scaring off the newcomer, you know, me being Christian, and that's the God of my understanding, and it's all wonderful things. I want to tell him how God is what he's done
to me. Let me tell you what the deal. You know, even Bill Wilson, who came from the Oxford Group, who was a member of Calvary Chapel, who, you know, was sponsored by all these priests and everything, who was a Christian, you know, as Bob was, even he had problems with that. And we all have problems with that kind of stuff. And I'm just going to tell you from my own point of view. And, you know, I feel strongly about my faith and a lot of other things, okay? I honestly think everybody has to develop their own deal. I mean, I give people the freedom as much as I'll put it to you this way, and I heard this said to me by another guy. This is not original with me, okay? It may be my obligation, you know, my faith is such that it doesn't allow me to force my faith on anybody, but I'm obligated maybe to share it. You understand? So all I'm saying is this. This is attraction rather than promotion, you know? I don't force anybody to do anything, and people have to develop their own concept of what the God is of their understanding. And, you know, I freely talk about what's in the big book. You understand what I'm saying? What's in the big book and the 12 and 12, and whether I don't know if you all know it or not, and how many have been through my steps, there's enough stuff in there about God and who he is and what he is and the characteristics of him. You know, he's all powerful and everything like that. If you don't have a sense of the God thing or developing, you're just not reading the book, or you don't want to have a sense. You know, you don't have to be, I just don't think you have to be so pushy of your own deal. Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
Then again, you know, that's...
That makes so much sense. It's the most sense you've made. You're catching it. I was sitting on pins and needles waiting to hear where it ended. Anyway, that was perfect. It was perfect. You know, that's one of the greatest questions, okay? Because I came into AA, and I didn't know if I was an agnostic or an atheist. And I found out I was an ignoramus. No, I had to watch, and like he said, see the people that have what I wanted. They had the glint in their eye. They had the look. They seemed to have life under control. One of the greatest things in this book, and it's been talked about, it's mentioned all over, whenever you study the history of the text and the history of this organization, is the little italicized as we understood it. Everywhere it talks about God, it says, as we understood it. The reason this is such an inclusive organization is because you don't have to have my God, nor do I have to have yours. There's one who has all power that's imbued my soul, that has allowed me to share with others the miracle in me. The same with Russell, the same with you, and the same with however many other people here. And I do a lot of speaking, not as much as Russell, because I want to ask Russell if he ever goes to a meeting just to listen. He said, why would I do that? So, Right, he hasn't gotten to that page yet. But you know what? And I found this over and over. If I talk about God, and it's going to scare you out of the room, booze and drugs is going to scare you back. I'm not that powerful. Really, it's simple. I have my story. He has his. You have yours. We share our experience, strength, and hope in a general way. What we used to be like, what happened, and what we're like today. If you want what we have, you do what we do. You take our number, and you find out a little bit more. And that's really the bottom line. It's not about proselytizing. You know? That's not what we do here.
I do want to say one thing, lest you think I'm actually tolerant. You know, I will say something that seems intolerant, but I think it's, as we say, scriptural. I do take a stand in one point. You know, I love the atheist and the agnostic, and I'll try to work with them. But I do believe, I absolutely believe, based upon our literature, notwithstanding the fact that we're in Well People's Anonymous, we want everybody to love us, and we'd hate for people to be mad at us. I do believe that the book, if it stands for anything, it's the fact that it stands against atheism and agnosticism. I don't know how you can read a thing called Chapter of the Agnostics, which is the only chapter in the Agnostics, which says this sort of thinking has to be abandoned. How you can read Dr. Bob, who says if you're an atheist, agnostic, or have some sort of intellectual pride that keeps you from accepting what's in this book, I feel sorry for you. Your Heavenly Father will never let you down. Now, who the God is you choose, if you don't understand, that's one thing. But I think there's a tendency, one of the problems with alcoholics is we tend to be codependent. As a whole and as people, we tend to worry about what other people think about us a lot. And the worst thing for an alcoholic to feel is that somebody doesn't like them. You know, it'll keep them up all night. And that sort of thing permeates us to the extent that we don't want to stand for everything. We sort of like go along with everything with the crowd just so they'll accept us. And that sort of thing allows serious basic principles in here to be watered down. And it even says in the book, he says, we never apologize for God. It goes to a whole thing like that. And even Bill Wilson, if you read Dr. Bob and Good Oldtimers, reached the point when people were laughing at him because it happened, saying, well, maybe we shouldn't talk to him. He was backing off on the God thing. When it's the only thing, when Henrietta Simon finally said, that's the only thing that's saving you. And he says he finally agreed. So there is going to be a tendency for alcoholics, because we're so worried about my mother doesn't understand, my father doesn't understand, this one doesn't understand, to sort of back away from the truth of what this book is all about, you know, finding the God of your understanding and having that faith and going through the 11th step. There's going to be, understand that's part of the tendency about being an alcoholic, okay? And I happen to take a stand in the direction where I think that, now, the weird thing is about the fellowship as a whole, its truth is, we sort of like allow, what is it? My mother started Freethinkers in Alcoholics Anonymous. My mommy, you know, was an atheist in Alcoholics Anonymous, and she was a wonderful person, and I loved her. And we have groups like that. But the way I read the book, maybe I'm wrong, you read it. You read Chapter of the Agnostics. You read the stuff I'm saying. I think AA does take a stand regarding that particular deal. You understand what I'm saying? I don't believe I'm wrong on that. Thank you.
Unfortunately, it's about all the time we have tonight for questions. Since we've been open for membership, and anyone who'd like to become a member should see our secretary.